Chapter 37 On the Ruhr. He stuffed me on the flatboat up at the bow among the cargo. Barley, I thought, and bushels of potatoes. A few crates. We sat together up there, silently, and waited for the crew to load up the rest. Weiland fidgeted often, either with bits of debris he'd picked off the deck and roll between his fingers or stray threads from his shirt, which he would yank away and then set to work at, meticulously separating the twisted fibers. I think it was mostly my presence. I made the man uncomfortable, obviously. Sometimes Weiland seemed to remember something and laughed to himself. He'd turn to me, smiling, opening his mouth to speak, and then just before he did, his eyes would snap to focus upon my face, any words he'd prepared nearly dead on his lips. Then he'd go back to picking at his shirt. It was a quality I'd had as a human as well. I am not made uncomfortable by a lack of conversation. On the contrary, a lack of discussion suits me just fine. Assuming there's nothing to discuss, of course. But if there are true things to discuss... Sometimes people discuss matters of great import or depth, or they tell stories to each other that carry great meaning, either in relationship to the world or just the storytellers themselves. It made all the difference between dull conversation and something truly invigorating. A meeting of minds where two beings connected, shared an idea, understood it together, grew together. Isn't that all we were ever looking for anyway? Even the drunks sought each other out. Why? We who generally regarded ourselves the misanthropic outcasts of society and who scoffed at the idea of companionship, yet still managed to find our way back without fail to the public house. You ran into people you knew and argued with them or wagered with them. Sometimes you told stories to them, sometimes you told them stories that were true. Weigh something like that against comments on the weather, gossip concerning the local nobility or some new law, one's appreciation of a certain pastry. These people tell each other the same stories every day, recycled again and again because they are comfortable. They make the teller and the listener feel safe to tread that familiar ground, like a warm blanket. And so there were certain people I often found myself talking to comfortably, and others around whom I was quite pleased to remain silent. For a rare and treasured few, I was able to do both. Geffen was one such friend. For others, if my silence was discomforting, I often found ways to enjoy that as well. But such sentiment also means that a man like myself rarely makes small talk. "It was you, wasn't it?" I said. "How's that? You killed me." In truth, I wasn't certain when I said it. Mostly it was a feeling I got when he looked at me. Also the way he'd taken me as a personal responsibility. A good leader would have done the same, of course, but it was in the way Weiland pursued his duties with me. I sensed a genuine concern from him on my behalf. His demeanor and our discussions had simply led me to believe there was something more at play. Based on that scant knowledge, I took a gamble. When his face drained of color, I knew my gamble had paid out. "Easy," I said. "Please be at peace. I mean you no harm." I waited for the muscles in his arms to slacken. We were positioned such that I was sitting slightly higher than him on a wooden crate while he lounged upon the deck with his back against a sack of barley. I was to his right, viewing him in profile, and he would not look at me. "I don't want to know what it was," I began.
"You truly don't remember?"
"No." He shook his head.
"I don't understand. Would you like me to explain it? I promise you'll have nothing but the truth from me. I've been a man of my word so far, haven't I?"
"Explain it? Explain to me, sir, how it is we could put the remains to pyre." "Oh, you burned me?" I asked. I was genuinely touched.
"I wouldn't do any other way. Some of the lads wanted to send you downriver, but I wouldn't have it."
"Well, that's kind of you, Weiland. Thank you for that." He nodded.
"What I'm asking, though, is how is it we could do that, yeah? And I see the remains rendered down to sizzlings on the coals. Then a few evenings later, you come strolling back into town?"
"Careful. The cobbles are showing,"
What? Sizzlins?
He shrugged it off.
Well, how?
Wyland, if it makes you feel better, you're not the only man it happened to.
I'm not?
No. I don't know who else was at me, but there was someone. I suppose there could always be a bandit running around the Owensberg with my notch on his scales.
Oh, would you like to know? Irpisha offered.
No, leave it. I'm fine.
But I understand this trip makes my third attempt.
What the fuck?
He moaned.
I agree.
I waited for him to collect himself, brief, thankfully, and continued. The reason I bring all this up is that I want you to know it would be a real shame if you lost sleep over this. You haven't really harmed me, Wyland. I know you think you did. Maybe I even made some unpleasant sounds when you did it, but I honestly don't remember a thing. It's not even possible for me to have bad or vengeful feelings toward you. The first memory I have of seeing your face was at the cradle. So, go easy on yourself, all right? No one is angry with you here. I'm not a restless spirit. If you wanted to climb off this boat right now, go back to your wife and children and just be quit of me, that's a thing you can do right now, my friend. You don't need to spend any more time with me than you want. And I know for damn sure whoever the lady is back in that cozy little house has a face far prettier than mine.
He snorted and looked in my direction. You have a gift for understatement.
Yes, it's something I work at regularly to hone. He laughed and I joined him.
It's kind of you to offer, he began. I don't want details, I said, cutting him off. I don't care how it happened, who was at fault. It's unnecessary. The information doesn't need to hang between us.
He nodded slowly, as if carefully choosing his next words, then said,
I'll stay. It's beyond any responsibility I might feel for, you know, the other. But I started a job. I'll see it through.
Just then, we began to drift away from the dock. We felt a silence as one of the pole men joined us at the bow to help guide the boat along. He and his companion at the stern pulled out to the middle of the Ruhr, where the current took us and propelled the low-laden craft southward. Her captain, a thin spike of a man named Arnulf, steered our passage carefully by the tiller while the pole men fought against our ballast. Pretty soon, we were well underway, with Plotzdorf's finest waterfront buildings scrolling lazily by. When the pole men finally drifted back to midships, Wyland said,
You told me you'd explain how it worked.
I glanced at him.
Thought we weren't discussing that. No, you said to me you wanted no details of a certain event. That, I believe, does not restrict you from explaining a few things. At a broad level, of course.
Right, I nodded.
Well, let me see how to start this. At the beginning usually gets it done.
I smiled at him.
Just so, just so.
I told him a few things. Not everything, of course. I don't know if there was enough of the Ruhr to contain it all in detail. But I gave him a working summary, starting at my discovery of Riza, after which I paused and decided I had to go back even further. I went back to waking on the mountain with Ing at my feet, and of course, once I did, realized I would have to go even earlier to the pit. After that, there was really no use in hiding that I'd once been a digger, but I realized when I admitted it was so that it didn't bother me anymore. I didn't particularly fear what he would say to me. What could he say? What could he possibly do to me? All of this is to say that I took no pains to conceal anything from him, but at the same time I skipped by details that simply weren't relevant. I told him I earned money for us to live by putting Riza on display, for instance, rather than going through all the verbal gyration that would be necessary to cast myself in a favorable light. Leaving out all of the rationalization made for quick telling. When I reached the end, which in our case happened right as we were sitting on that deck, I said,
So, to answer your question, Wyland, regarding how a man such as myself can be put to the flame by another man such as yourself, and be rendered down until he was sizzlings on the coals, is as I've stated.
This is not my original body. It has been crafted for me by the gods to use when I find it necessary. I am no longer a physical being, you see. I exist now only as a spiritual consciousness. When I need to move through your world, I take a piece of myself and put it in this form. I go out into this place, I walk its fields, I speak to its people, we tell each other stories. When I'm finished here, I'll return to myself, the greater portion of myself, that is, and there my experiences from both realms will merge and a complete being will be restored. As I spoke, I began probing cautiously with the tool Irpisha had given me. I discovered I could feel it contacting the metal edges of the manacles, as if there was an extra finger attached to each arm that I could shape in any way I desired. I went slowly, tapping over the surface gently like a cat until I found the hole to the locking mechanism.
And where is this place, where your greater portion resides? The halls of Godon? Hell's underworld? The chaos?
He whispered the last bit. In answer, I pointed to Sunna's throne.
Presently, I am there.
Wyland swallowed carefully.
You're a god, sir?
I extended a finger. Not yet. Right now, I'm little more than half-formed, I think. I suppose you could say I'm a man without a body in a temporary body. To state any further might be construed as grandiose. I have a final test to attend.
The lock was nothing I'd ever encountered before. Smiths were usually good enough to defeat most locks with a set of specialized picks, but I was no locksmith. If I'd searched within myself, I probably would have found the knowledge I required, but such things were still very new to me. In those days, I usually did not realize something was possible until I stumbled upon it by accident. In this case, I settled on force rather than skill. I filled the inner cavity of the lock housing and then expanded until I felt the mechanism crack.
And that's in Kolmar, is it?
Hmm?
Oh, no. No, that is something I do for Udo. I thought you were Udo, sir. Yes, I am.
Damned confusing, isn't it? He half shrugged.
Say the least.
We fell silent for a while. We were both comfortable. Then Wyland stirred and asked,
What's the test, then?
I thought quietly. Then,
That, friend Wyland, I think is something I do for you. Me, sir. All of you.
The manacles clanked onto the deck. Wyland flinched and looked at them, obviously startled. A kind of fascinated curiosity shone in his eyes as he reached for them, hand moving slowly as though mesmerized. Then he pulled it back and looked at me, expression difficult to read, something near to shame but not quite. He stood, kicked the jumble of metal into the rur, and then walked aft without a word. I resumed watching Plotzdorf scroll by. We continued south. When I quizzed Arnulf about the lack of muscle on his boat, they were a small crew and none of them were armed, save for heavy spikes, which were only ever used for rope craft, he looked at me as if I'd gone crooked in the head.
Guards? You mean guards? No one iron guards on the Rur.
His dialect was thick, and I was forced to devote much attention to confirming I'd heard what I thought he said. No fear of bandits, I asked. Truth be told, I was trying to decide if I would stand and fight with them if we were waylaid, or if it would simply be better to go overboard and swim. The stakes for me were rather low, as it were. I might be able to save quite a few of their lives if it came to fighting, while the loss of my own was really nothing to me in the long run. But I also understood that this was the furthest I'd managed to get without being killed. I didn't want to lose any more time. Then a thought occurred to me as I was speaking to Arnulf. I pursued it with Irpisha in the meanwhile.
Why didn't we take the raft back? Every world has a few rafts, and I know there's at least one that docks fairly close to the middle of Erda. Wouldn't that have been faster than entering at the North Pole?
Bandits? On the rear? Are you gone mad?
We would have had to go back through hell to reach one. Then we would have had to call it and wait for it to reach us. That's a lot of time just standing out there in the open.
You're telling me all travel in Theodiscus is safe? No one need hire a guard to go anywhere?
Oh, God, sir, no. Overland are still a touchiest goes. It still wants for arms. But there is a main trade route.
The Watcher's still a problem? I've already been through the first merge.
A main trade route, and therefore perfectly safe? I couldn't understand how an abundance of goods drifting idly by on flatboats failed to attract a never-ending line of thieves.
Sir, you could put an open chest of gold on a skiff and send her all the way to the ocean. Not a soul would touch her.
Lelwani is not the kind to give up easily, Udo. As it happens, he has the patience of an immortal god.
I understand, I said to the both of them. Wyland was not avoiding me. It would have been impossible to do so on such a small vessel. But he was not exactly passing the time with me either. He was polite. When the meal came, usually food that had been either pickled or preserved in salt, he was polite. He'd often bring me a bowl balanced in the palm of his hand along with a crust of bread, which I took and for which I thanked him. Then he would offer up a little bow that struck me as shy, as if it was the first time he'd made the gesture. Then he would back away and go eat with the crew. I think at first I was hurt. I liked Wyland. I enjoyed his company and had perhaps been looking forward to his conversation as we drifted south. I reasoned that he must have thought I was a madman or that I was running some sort of con. I could not see how such a con might be arranged, of course. No matter how you planned it, someone had to end up dead. Disregard the fact that I would have had to find someone who looked enough like me to be easily mistaken. Oh, perhaps I had a twin. That would be more likely, I suppose, than finding another man at random who simply looked like me. But either way, twin or double walker, that person had to consent to being killed for the last few days' events to be a planned con. I suppose such willing participants are out there somewhere, but the plausibility seems unlikely. Or perhaps a double con. I tricked both my double walker and the unsuspecting people of Plotzdorf, in which case I must have been a truly wicked man in Wyland's eyes. This also lacked the ring of truth. He should have pitched me into the river in that case, or simply set me on the flatboat, dust his hands, and be quit of me. Instead, he was escorting me. Maybe it was only that he didn't trust the job to be done until he could confirm for himself that I'd become someone else's problem. He'd hand me to some senior guard in Colmar, salute, and disappear back north, relieved to assume that even if I could not be killed, I could at least be jailed well away from him. But he still brought me food, regardless. I always took it to the bow, to sit close enough to the edge that I could not see the boat at all. My field of view was filled only with the river and the green flatlands that lengthened to either side of me, and the high country that curved overhead, and the long tube of Erda stretching away south. Sometimes I looked at the sun, but usually avoided doing so. I did not suffer a recurrence of doubleness when I did. This was not the reason for my reluctance. It was only that I felt a distance from that world whenever I did. There were occasions on which I realized I'd been staring into the sun so long that my eyes, which were new and miraculous, capable of multispecial analysis, watered freely down my cheeks. At the time, I had no idea when I would next return to Erda in body, if ever, and so I wished very much to be present in that setting, to see all of it, to record every detail. When I was certain the crew could not see, I would dump the food into the water, place the bowl between my feet, and sight along my Erdoscope.